Hello, everyone. I'm Carter Lindzen, and this is QU, a student podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. We are in Studio Q here today at North Campus, and today's date is the May the 1st, so happy May, everyone. We are almost done with a school this school year, so how is everybody doing today? My co-hosts today are Rochelle Witzke. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Carter. How are you?
Doing great. Grant Owen, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great.
And Angelina Pagliacci, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's great to hear, guys. So, obviously, we are the digital media writing class, and we had this great story come on our palette that we all agreed on with our housing problem on campus. So I'm going to ask a couple questions today and see how everybody's little part is going, because we all have our own little part. My part is the maintenance of our dormitories, as well as Grant is the cost of housing. You are the positions of housing, and Rochelle, remind me again, what you're rocking with today?
I mainly did research on the lottery system.
The lottery system, that's what it was. So, whoever would want to start off, give us a brief little summary on what your section is about.
Okay, I guess I'll start off.
Rochelle by default, I guess.
Yeah, it's okay. So essentially what my job was to research the lottery system, how it works, how students fall into it, the system that goes on between picking housing, choosing roommates, and mainly one of the big concerns that I tackled is whether or not students find it fair or unfair, whether they find that the lottery can be discriminatory towards certain students or classes, or whether they think the school system should be more transparent as to how it works.
And what did you find? Is there big transparency there and them talking about and really working with others?
I found that a lot of students honestly don't know what happens. It took a lot of digging to even figure out what is a lottery system, like the requirements in place on how you get your number at the end of the year, because it was around mid to late April when everyone got their lottery numbers.
Yeah.
Students in the same classes, students with the same grades, the same GPAs were receiving drastically different numbers, and no one could figure out how or why that was.
So what did you find that kind of kept under lock and key, or what did you find there with how that system works?
I found that honestly it probably changes a lot year to year. And students are not notified about it. I know that the rate in which you sign your housing agreement when it first comes out also depends on how quickly you're placed into that number system. Obviously your GPA, your class. But other than that, a lot of it is pretty mysterious. And a lot of students, I would say, have difficulty discerning how or how not to get into certain housing, because some students need certain housing that they can't access because their lottery number is so low and they don't know why. I know at least last year they put in place like a continuity system where you can apply to stay in the same housing if you reach like a certain credit requirement. For example, if you're in the SLC as of right now and you want to stay in that exact room in the SLC, you need at least 80 credit hours or more, because if you were to go through that system and you had over 80 credit hours, the SLC room would be almost a guaranteed.
Usually. But we also have found this year that a lot of sophomores are trying to bypass this lottery system by having one of their buddies who is an upperclassman go in and request a continuity form for their SLC room, and then bail out and go out to an off-campus housing system, which they are just starting to catch on to. So these sophomores kind of were out of luck unless they found a senior to live with them. So that's what I found on some of my independent research. But we've also found, have you looked into the continuity of residence forms at all, or just the lottery system?
I mainly focused on the lottery system, but have you looked into the residence forms?
The residence forms are terrible.
I know. Like, they didn't give me a lottery number this year. I know two girls, me included, they didn't get numbers. They didn't get a lottery. They didn't get anything. And so we had to go up to court and be like, hey, are we allowed on campus? And he was like, yeah, you should have came sooner. We didn't know what to do. Like, you don't really know what to do in those situations because you think you're just kind of getting kicked out. like kicked off campus, you're like, okay, bye. You don't get a lottery number, bye.
I feel like the lottery system is almost like a carrot and stick operation where you just, you assume that you need a number and there's no more information beyond that. You take what the number gives you.
Exactly. You take the number and you take the time that is given to you to pick your house, and that's about it. That's all. You don't think about anything more or less.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was doing. I'm like, I was waiting till the very end. I was waiting. I think I waited 2-3 weeks and I still didn't get anything. And then I had to, no text, no confirmation from like court or like the housing system at all about it. They're like, they just kind of thought either you were leaving or not.
Were you able to get the housing that you wanted?
I'm back in Friars again, and which is nice, but I tried to get off campus, but they wouldn't let me get off campus.
Off campus housing is a whole other dog.
Yeah, I was only, I think, about 5 credit hours off, and they wouldn't let me. Yeah. And I know of some people that are off campus with less than I have. So it was very, very frustrating.
So did you find any solutions to the lottery system problems during your research?
Honestly, it just comes from a certain amount of transparency that the school has with students. I mean, maybe making stricter guidelines that are more upfront and honest, like having something posted or having, I mean, a lottery system is in place because there's so many students, like it's going to be hard to get everybody the best case scenario. But I think if more people just knew exactly what was going into how they get their number and they weren't seeing such huge discrepancies with their peers, they would be more okay with it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rochelle. That was some great insight on the housing lottery system, because we know there are huge problems with that. Now we're going to go over to Mr. Grant Owen. Grant Owen's going to the cost of housing. What makes the money go around, Mr. Grant?
Yeah, so I emailed archives, because I'm doing like the past and present of cost of housing. So I emailed them at the beginning time that we started working on this paper, and they just now got back to me. But I also, my grandpa went here, so I do have some numbers from like 1970s. So cost of living in 1970 was like $2,000, but again, inflation and the price of cost of living has definitely gone up in America since then.
Doubled or tripled.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it was crazy. He'd be telling me what the price of gas was. It was astounding.
60 cents a gallon?
Yeah, I guess. COVID numbers. But no, I've also been talking to a lot of students here, and they're really frustrated with the cost of housing.
Yeah, it's respectable.
It's actually insane.
And it's going up by each semester, not year now.
Yeah, and they're also forcing you to buy a meal plan. Like, the fact that, like, I don't need to eat unlimited swipes. I can totally be fine with
2 to 3 swipes a day.
So whatever, like 200 swipes per semester. I don't know. But yeah, it's also because the price of school here with tuition and everything before scholarships and aid is $49,000.
It's up to 51 now. 51 with the new 3.8% increase in the tuition.
Yeah. So it's, I think, 30, but I mean, if you live in Helion alone, that you're paying upwards of $13,000 with an unlimited meal plan. So,
just for housing and food?
For housing and food, $13,000, yeah. So I think that's just why everyone's so frustrated. And like, it also is like making international so worried, because some countries don't have the better exchange rates. That's what I've learned. And so their dollar or their currency isn't worth as much, and it's going to hurt them in the future trying to pay back their student loans.
So where did you find was the most expensive place to live on campus was?
I think it's a single room in Helion. No?
It's a single room in Friars. Oh, it's over $14,000.
That's crazy.
I also heard they are
increasing. It's over $14,000 for a single. Yeah.
They're also increasing the price of Willer here soon as well.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, that's.
They're upping Willer by 200.
I think it's 200 or 300. But you live with 8 people. Like, that's 8 people, and that's not even counting like saying maybe one person will have a single or one person will transfer or something like that. That's 8 people you share a room with, and you're paying what, 13? 13.8 about? That's insane. Paying 13.8 to be roommates with 8 people.
And you want to know what
or 7 people.
You know, want to know what the cheapest is?
What?
SLC, no meal plan.
Exactly. SLC, everyone wants SLC just because of that. Just because of that or Woods, right?
Still only
right?
like $2,000 cheaper, though.
It's $8,000.
Hey, $2,000, or I'm like, any amount of money is good money. Anything off your tuition is great news to hear.
Yeah, it's nuts. Nuts. We're trying, hopefully, we find a spot where everything is plateaued.
We're hoping. This is the end. I got 2 more years here, hoping that I don't see any more 3.8s increases, because that was...
I believe I saw a graphic somewhere where, is it 16% it's gone up in the past 5 years?
Yeah.
So, Grant, what's the solution to the cost of housing problem?
I don't know if there is one, to be honest with you. I think it's just... I also did learn that they let more people in last year than they had rooms for. So I did learn that because that's why a couple of our teammates had to live off campus, was because they got pushed out of their rooms because they let too many people in. Because they had to take away a...
is it like in the freshman dorms they're getting overpopulated? Yep. Oh, okay.
So that's why they had to take away a couple of the RAs from the basement in the top floor, because they had too many people in Garner.
That's nuts. Well, thank you for your insight, Mr. Grant.
No problem.
That was a lot of great stuff with cost. So now we're going to go to Angelina Pagliacci.
Oh, yeah. Getting there.
And she looked at the workers in housing.
Yes, which
the student workers, not the maintenance people like me and Elle. She looked into the RAs, RDs position. So tell us a little bit of your insight over there.
Insight on just kind of RAs. It's a great place to be. I'm like, it honestly, they support you a lot, but when it comes down to it, this year they did a lot of revamping and making everything kind of new. So a lot of our present RAs that were promised it's usually 3 years you get the job, or whenever you have it, you keep the job for 3 years or X amount of time.
Unless you get fired.
Unless you get fired, and usually that hasn't happened before this. And now they're redoing their whole system, like I said, and they're doing a system of everyone has to interview again. RDs don't have to interview again because they're already graduates. It's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. But RAs all have to reapply, reassess everything. And I was talking to one of the RAs that got let go. They didn't tell any of the people why they got fired. They more of just were like, yeah, you did the best that you can, but you're not the right fit for the dorm. From what I saw, that are going to still be paying a lot amount of money to go to the school. The RA position is keeping the RA position. So they're training a lot of new people, getting a lot of new people in. But there was a lot of overcrowding, like I said, and they're training a lot of them that I spoke to. They think that there should be more mental health training and either training in just dangers, more different dangers, as in they need to be prepped on shootings, they need to be prepped on mental health awareness, like getting into dorms quickly and stuff like that. And also fires, they also say they need more fire training because they don't really know what to do. So I saw a lot of faults, but I definitely see where they're doing the best that they can with the people that they have as well.
All right. So what are they changing about the whole RA process? Like what's the new that they're...
Like to get the RA position?
Yeah.
The RA position now, you have to... first, it is the email out. If you want to be in it, you have to go to the website, go under Res Life, and pretty much sign up to be a part of the process. If you get the second part, you go in and you interview. You interview, and from that part, you already send in your resume, and you have to send in resumes. That's a big thing. Resumes, they look over your resume and what you've done and what you, like, see if you've worked with kids, see if you've worked with other people, how you work with people. They actually look at that. But during this interview, they were asking very weird questions. I was a part of it as well. I did interview for it. And one of the questions was, if you were to describe yourself, what kind of candy would you be? What candy would you be? It was very odd. I get that they were trying to make it like lighthearted and fun. But at the same time, if you're making it very business-wise, you got to keep the business-wise throughout the whole thing. Even if people are nervous, that's how you weed out people. In my opinion.
Right. The interesting questions there as well. And What are some positives that you see out of this new RA process?
I definitely saw a lot of, like, for example, Jordan Satumba. He is keeping his job as well. He's been a very, very good RA from a lot of what Heline has told me. He has done a lot of the little parties, the pizza parties, and kind of like all of that stuff. They get to have a chance to work with everybody. It gives opportunity to people that want to be either in like business or some type of relations with people, and it gives them a chance to work with the people. And I think it's a really good way to start off your career, have on your resume.
Yeah, I mean, the RA position is a very good thing.
Oh, yes.
Everybody likes to see, everybody sees the free room and board part, and they forget about
they're on in 5 seconds.
They forget about the what it can actually do to help bolster your career. So, Angelina, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You had a great little segment there.
Thank you.
Alrighty, so right now we're adding another three up to the plate. We have Freya Hansen, Jasmine Hopkins, and Kyron Danae. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
It's a great day to be a Hawk.
I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So you guys have a little bit different topics. Freya has all the places to live on campus. You have just a history of the living on campus. And Mr. Kyron has the problem with space on campus. Let's start with that. So we have a huge space problem. What did you find in your research?
Yeah, so while I was researching, I realized that a lot of students have problems with space in dorms, whether that is enough space to operate, putting stuff in the dorms, or whether that's just being in a dorm and being able to study. Being in a cramped space, I found out that being in a cramped space like that, like, definitely takes a toll on your academics. And, you know, being at Quincy University is a lot of athletes. So when you don't have enough space to operate, and as athletes, you got to have that time, that downtime. When your room is very cramped, and it's even worse when you have a roommate who may not have the same schedule or doesn't align with what you're trying to do. If you play two different sports, which does happen multiple times, I have another anecdote that's not an anecdote in the story. My teammate, sprint football teammate Thomas Murray, he rooms with a lacrosse player, and their schedules don't align. So when Tom's trying to study or something, his roommate, I think his name is Ian, his roommate is either going through his plays or doing what they got to do, and it just doesn't add up. And one half of the room is split up because due to the space, and it's just all over the place. So students are feeling cramped. Students feel like they don't have enough space to operate, and that also ties in with what I'm doing in the parking spots, because we don't really have a lot of parking spots on campus. Students are having a hard time finding parking. We only have a few lots, C lot. There's some lots adjacent to Gardner Hall and Heline Hall that fills up really quickly. We know the Willer lot in between Willer and Gardner and Heline fill up pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's, down there.
You go to class, you come back, your spot's gone, and you could go get some gas for 5 minutes and your spot will be gone. So, and then you got to park on the side street in front of people's houses, and people don't like that. So it's definitely a battle, and space on campus as a whole is definitely something that I'm trying to tackle. For sure.
Definitely. I mean, these dorm rooms, they're not big and luxurious. I mean, what the Paddle dorm room is, what, 10 by 12?
Yeah. I have some numbers here that I'm looking at. It says the Paddle Hall is 10 by 6 times 15 by 6. So not that big. Definitely. And when they try to put two people in there, it's
not big.
Not at all.
And then I did hear rumors about them putting three in a pad room. Did you find any?
I don't think substance. That. I did do an interview with Court and Quartarius Finley, the director of housing operations. He said that that was not true, so I don't know where that came from. Mm-hmm. But he said that we've also never been, like, super cramped or had a cramping issue. I don't know if that's a little bit of damage control on the school's part, but he said we weren't cramped, but students have a different opinion. So I feel like it's just a battle with that. Got to tackle it.
And I know there's some forums out there stating there's how many people are physically allowed to live in each room. Did you find anything on that as well?
Not necessarily any forums. I did find that Court did say that they're trying really hard to meet the demands of students, and not everyone can get a single. So if a student wants a single and they can't get it, they'll just have to deal with it. And I know he said it's a bad thing that it has to be like that, but he's doing everything he can and the school's doing everything they can. So it's just going to have to be able to cooperate with both sides.
Yeah, what solutions have you found to this space problem?
Just making sure that you're communicating with the school. Students, Court was big on if he doesn't know it's a problem unless someone tells him. So students being able to communicate with the school and the school being able to receive that constructive criticism and make decisions.
Yeah, and then and also another big one, we have three floors of dorms right up over here in North Campus. Why aren't they using those?
I have no clue why they're not using those, actually.
Yeah, I know the last time they were used was in the 2020 lockdown. This was the quarantine area. This was the keep everybody away area. But I hope they start exercising that option here soon. I know for us communication majors, that would be great. Just walk down a flight of stairs, and that would be awesome.
Man. Definitely.
Yeah, it would be great. Well, Mr. Kyron, thank you so much
for
everything, my friend. And you had a lot of great insight on the true size of the space problem here, no pun intended. Alrighty, and then let's go to Ms. Freya Hansen. Ms. Freya, you had everything to do with where can we live on campus? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I did some research about different styles of housing on campus just to get a big overview of where students actually can live. And yeah, we pretty much have Garner, who's like freshman students only for women. And then we have Padua Hall and T-Line, which is only for men. And I think Padua is for freshmen too. And then in all those three dorms, you can both have a single room and you can have double rooms. It's just whether or not you want to pay for that. If you want to pay for a single room to be alone, you can. But the cost will be more expensive. And then we have Willow Hall, which is more suite styles, where you can live. You can have a single room in Willow too, but you can also have a double room.
Most people have a double, correct?
Exactly. So mostly the RAs in Willow have a single room.
Okay. And then there's Friars as well.
Friars, you can have single and double there too. Just, all right. Again, depends on the price and whether or not you want to pay for it. And you have shared bathrooms in Friars. Yeah. So
brutal.
Shared bathrooms. I believe in Padua it's shared bathrooms and showers as well.
Don't worry, Elle will talk about that.
He will talk more about
soon.
That. So yeah, and then we have student living center, which is more apartment style living where you have your own room, but you have a whole living room and own bathroom together with two other people.
Then you have Woods as well, which is Woods, like single apartments, single and double apartments, correct?
Yes.
And so you found that stuff as well. So what are some of the findings you've seen with those types of housings? What are the percentages of where students live on campus?
Oh, I didn't find percentages of where students live on campus, but I talked with people about what they like and don't like about where they live.
Yeah, so what are some of the problems we're seeing with the places that people are living on campus?
So I talked with a girl in Garner, and she told me that she actually really liked living in Garner because you live with all the freshmen, so you get to have your own experience with all the freshmen as a first-year student together with everyone else, and like you start from scratch with a whole bunch of people. So she really liked that. The only thing she didn't like was laundry, but I think a lot of students at campus just in general doesn't like laundry. So she was actually pretty surprised. And then I talked with a girl from Willer, which she really liked Willer, but and the suite and the whole living room, but she thinks the Willer rooms are too small to be double rooms.
Right.
And it's also some heating problems and stuff like that, so just trying to figure out stuff like that. And then I talked with a girl from SLC, and she thinks SLC is one of the best places to live based on having your own room and living room and having that whole apartment feeling. The only thing is just dishes.
Yeah, dishes are not fun there, as well as sometimes your hot water heater breaks and it starts leaking into the communal hallway, which is not fun. Trust me, I had to deal with that. Living in SLC this year, it's not very fun. gotta love maintenance, right? But you have those spots to live. So one thing that I have a question for is there is only two handy-capable dorm livings that are on this campus. Do you think that the administration here should do something about that? Because the only two handy-capable living areas are SLC and Friars. Mm-hmm. And those, I don't know about you, but those elevators are unreliable.
Yeah.
So what do you think a solution to that problem would be? Would it be remodeling an existing dorm building, or would it be creating a new dorm space?
It depends on the cost. But I would definitely say if remodeling is the cheapest of, what's it called?
Option.
Option, thank you. For the school, I would definitely recommend that because I live in Willer and I live on fifth floor. And some days it's just not fun to go all those.
Yeah, your knees will start to kill you about 4-3. I know it's not very fun, which I know some athletes who live in Willer who are get injured. They do not love that trek. It takes them about 20 minutes. So I believe that one of our best options is actually having an elevator to take those students up and down those stairs, because there is only one handicapable. There's two handicapable places on campus. Friars and SLC, and it's not a really good thing. I mean, I believe that's because all their buildings have been grandfathered in, and they don't really have to do any real renovations about it. There's no real city inspections, which Ms. Brianna will tell us about here in a minute. But yeah, that's what do you think? Do you think that they should add more living spaces here, like more campus or new building?
Okay. So personally, like you said before, I'm a communication major. So every time I have to do homework or stuff like that, I have to do it here at North Campus. So I have to bike all the way sometimes at night at like 10 or 11 o'clock in the evening, which I would think is a little bit dangerous.
Very dangerous with a bike with no light.
I have fixed that problem.
You fixed that problem? Awesome.
But yeah, personally, I would like to live at North Campus and be able to do homework very easier. So I would say yes if I got the option to live over here.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Freya. That's some very good insight on everywhere to live on campus. Now, since we just talked about words currently here, let's talk about what used to be here, because there used to be a ton here from what Ms. Jasmine Hopkins was saying earlier this week. There used to be a ton, correct?
There used to be a lot more places to live. There were some places on campus, such as the Solono building or the Augustine building, and those have been torn down since. But there were also other houses, like private houses, and they weren't necessarily on campus, but students could still apply to live in there. With their teammates or otherwise. But one of the really cool ones that I have found that they have torn down was Augustine, and that was actually in the C lot, the parking lot C lot. And it was somewhere in between apartment style living and something that you would find in Woods.
Yeah. The old dorm building next to Court's house that we wish was there, that would be the most west of campus. But yeah, you found some of those places that have been torn down. Do you know the reasons that some of those places have been torn down?
I didn't figure out the Augustine building, but the Solono building, that one was originally an orphanage, and it was around it's one of the longest standing buildings on campus for sure. And it was a woman's dorm for a while, and then it was a music building, and then the music building got moved here to North Campus, and that left the building empty, and they tore it down after that.
What year did they tear that down?
I do know this. 2008.
Man, I wish they would have just remodeled it and kept it, because that would have been nice. But then that would get into Kyron's problem with parking, which is not a very fun problem. So, yeah, you've had a couple of dorm buildings here that have been torn down, and then you've had, what are the ages of all the buildings on campus?
I don't necessarily know the ages, but I know when they were built, if you want to do the math to figure out how old they are.
The listeners can do math.
The Solono Hall became, like, It was built in 1919, but it wasn't originally part of the school during that time because it was an orphanage. There is another place here on campus that was used as a dorm for a while. It's called Cupertine. It's connected to almost like behind the chapel.
Okay, yeah. It's where the new arts, like, storage room is, right?
Yes. It was originally built as, like, a laundry steam room, and then it was turned into dorms, and then it got changed to a place where the student newspaper was, the Falcon, and they did that out of there, and now it's just a storage for art. But that was built in 1922. As for ones on campus, Woods and Augustine, though Augustine has been torn down, they were both built in 1957. Heline was originally called Centennial, and that was built in 1960. So that's a fun name. It was named because Centennial because it was built on the 100th year of the university, so it was a celebration of that. But it was renamed in 2011. Gardner was built next in 1963. Padua was built in 1966.
Oh, and you can tell Pad was built in 66.
And then Willer was originally known as the Lynn Street Apartments, and that was built in 1970, and then renamed Willer in 1993. And then after that, the Student Living Center was the last one built, and that was built in 2011.
2011. So the oldest being around 67 years old, and then you have just under 15 for SLC. So there's, you can see the real history in our housing.
One thing that I did find out about Woods is when it was originally built, it was built with orange shag carpet. I have no clue when they tore that out, but that is a, like, being built like over in the 60s. I thought that was crazy.
That is. Reminds me of Austin Powers or something here and that. But, yeah, so obviously you've researched these places to live here on campus as well as the history, everything. And do you believe that some of these buildings shouldn't have been torn down and been remodeled for more space and more kind of helping out on campus?
I mean, yes and no. At the time when they were torn down, they didn't need the space. They didn't have as many students on campus. Thinking ahead, sure, it would have been convenient, but at the time it was what was more fitting for the environment and what they had on their plate. And as far as parking go, like with where Augustine was, they needed parking at the time, and we need parking now. You can see that. So it fit the demand of the time. While it'd be more convenient now, there have to be other options. I mean, we still have the spot where the Salone building stood, and that's over by the HFC, kind of.
Friars Field, right?
So there's Friars Field, and then right next to Friars Field towards the HFC is that grass plot.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it stood there, and if you're ever walking over there, there's that stone wall, and there's a break in the stone wall, and that was where the entrance to the building was.
Okay.
So while it wasn't necessarily a huge building, it was still useful.
It was a useful building enough for living, and I'm just going to be spitballing here, but where do you if they were to build another building here on campus for dorms, academia, where do you think they would put it?
That's a great question. I think over by Salone would be great, but I don't think building a new dorm is necessarily the solution. As you guys were talking about before, here at North Campus, they have old rooms that they used back in 2020 during COVID. But like aside from that, I feel like that would be the most beneficial because there's the space and it's been used as that prior.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. That was a lot of great insight of the history of the campus. I'm sure we wish that Salone was still there for a little bit more housing options, but yeah, thank you so much, Jasmine. It was a very good insight. Thank you. Now we have the part where everybody will cringe a little bit. We have Mr. L. Seeger talking about how cleanly our dorm situation is. So, Mr. L, can you tell us about everything?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a couple glaring issues that I've kind of found this year, especially being a part of the dorm life at QU, and just from talking to other people and getting more perspective on the just the situation. You know, there's definitely some maintenance issues, kind of like what Freya was touching on earlier with the elevator situation in some of the dorms where athletes, you know, they're not able to get to where they're trying to go without having to walk four flights of stairs up and down, or, you know, deal with, you know, stairwells where there's, you know, railings that are missing, or the floor is, you know, duct taped together to prevent people from slipping. So, you know, just things like that that, you know, kind of have hindered students from, you know, being able to move around and stuff like that is a problem for sure.
As well, you've also found some problems with the dorms being uncleanly. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, so, you know, being a part of, I stay in Padua Hall, which is one of the male-only dorms at QU, and I think, you know, a lot of people have the same experience that I've been talking to where, you know, they'll see things in the bathrooms that are just, you know, completely unkept, you know. There will be stuff on, you know, the side of the walls. There's, you know, different insects like cockroaches and stuff like that all over the dorm and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, it's definitely not a space you wanna be living in for any extended period of time, for sure, which isn't a good thing at all.
Yeah, it's a very uncleanly building. It's for a sure. part on the tenant, a little bit of a part on the tenants as well as some of the maintenance staff, which is part of my story. I'll give you a little bit of insight on that. My part is maintenance, talking about how the maintenance process works, as well as how the employees are actually unhappy with the National Management Services, which is the overarching maintenance partner here at Quincy University. Okay. I looked online on different employee survey sites, and National Management Services was rated a 1.6 out of 5 stars.
Wow.
Both nationally and in Quincy. So they believe that they are overworked and they do not have the ability to get these buildings up to code and really take care of these buildings with the amount of workload they have. So that's a huge problem we have here at the university, and which ends up to being where places are uncleanly, things are broken. There's no railings on stairwells.
Absolutely, for sure.
There's faulty elevators and there's faulty electricity. I mean, I've witnessed a past couple of days, a lot of my breakers have been failing, and there's not really anything I can do about it. But yeah, so what are some solutions you have, L, for everything?
Well, you know, first, I think, you know, something that you kind of reminded me of when you were talking about what's going on with just your side of the situation that you've been kind of unpacking is the fact that they don't have trash cans in our dorm at all anymore. And that it stopped, like, I want to say after the first couple of months, because, I mean, obviously, you know, 20, you know, year old kids are not always going to be, you know, the cleanliest, most kept people. So, I mean, you know, you're going to get situations where stuff overflows and stuff like that. So, you know, there's situations with management and, you know, students where they, you know, get at odds and, you know, it just ended up being a situation where they just decided to completely remove community trash cans from the building. And, you know, I don't think that would be like a positive solution. So back to what you were saying, kind of on what, you know, some functioning like solutions to a more positive outcome would be you know, having that open dialogue between the administration and the students on what the actual problems are with the buildings, you know, what can they do to make the lives of the students easier, and you know, have people that can, you know, manage their peers to a certain extent, find people, you know, in the community, in the student body, or, you know, whoever that you, you know, think could set the right example, and, you know, check people for doing stuff that is, you know, outside the code of what they're looking for. So I just think it takes a little bit of work for, you know, both the staff and the, you know, management of the school to, you know, handle the situation. That's it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Will.
Yep, yep.
That was a great insight. Now, we're going to transition to a little bit of off-campus housing with Brianna. Brianna, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day. It's a little bit cloudy, but 60 degrees, so I'm wearing flip-flops, so I'm happy. So you've found some problems with some off-campus housing, which there's problems here on campus, but what are some of the off-campus problems that you have been researching?
So for a little bit of like context, because I know that a lot of people are probably not really familiar with Quincy because they're not from around here. Quincy has always had a housing problem for many years now. And the main issues come from cost and also the physical state of rentals. So a two-bedroom apartment, according to the fair market rent, should be about $875 per month. But the problem is that a rentee has to make about $1,683 an hour, and they have to be a full-time employee. And when you're like a student at QU, that's not really possible, especially with how many people play sports and all that. I think that's really not going to happen. As for physical states of rentals, there are just like a bunch of problems with different facilities, overcrowding, and also, again, just the cost in general. So I ran a survey to our student off-housing people, and what I found on that survey was that most people still live with their parents and that they don't pay rent. So what that kind of showed me was that people who live off-house are only people from around here. Like, students are not going out of the way to go find housing.
Do you believe that's because the housing market is so expensive here in Quincy, or do you believe it's just the convenience of living on campus?
I think both. I don't know what it's like being a student from out of the area, but I would assume that it is much harder and much more stressful trying to find housing on your own when you can instead just use the one that campus provides.
Right. As well as we've heard some of the problems here, but what are some of the problems we're seeing in those off-campus rentals in the apartments created that are being upkept by these landlords?
Again, it's really just, I use the 2021 Adams County Community Needs Assessment and also a little bit from the 2024. And it really was just rundown housing. Like, facilities weren't being kept up, like with kitchens and plumbing. Mold is a problem, which is also a problem in QU pretty bad. It's just, they're not livable. Like, they, by definition, they just don't meet the standards of living. Right. But the problem is that the town or city doesn't have anything to protect rentees, which is also just a huge problem in and of itself.
Right, and obviously we just had this big mayoral run with Linda Moore coming out victorious. What do you believe what do you think that she should do to implement the helping of these rentees and protection from the actual renters themselves?
That's a really good question. There's probably a lot that can happen. I don't really know what all of that involves, but I do know that there was a program called QRIL, I believe is how you pronounce it, that got passed, and that, what was it actually? It's an alliance, not program. That alliance is working for renters to ensure that they, that it will deal with registration, inspection, licensing, and enactment of policies to help protect renters from, rentees from renters who are doing like unethical things.
Right. And then my last question for you will be, you have people here that are on low income housing as well as very close to the Alice line that Rochelle has mentioned to us before, which is which is above the poverty line, but with not being able to live comfortably. So how do you believe that the people who are living in these apartments and close to the Alice line should react to the renters actually punishing them for calling out the problems with their establishments?
Sorry, can you reword that question one more time?
Yeah, so the people in the Alice line living in the low-income housing, how do you believe they should be protected when they actually state a claim to their renter?
So I definitely think that there needs to be laws and regulations put in place that will kind of like whistleblowers at like a job site, just protect them and ensure that they will still have a place to live and all that. I think it all just comes down to ensuring that they don't get punished for speaking out the truth, and because everyone deserves to have housing and all that. And so they shouldn't be punished or anything for seeking that out, because that's just like a human need. I will say real quick, one thing that I found out that was really fun, or not fun, but in my survey, I asked what are some problems that people face with off-living housing as a student. And one of the responders said that, or actually I think two of them said that they don't feel active on campus. And it tied into my last story last semester.
Yeah, because you feel like there's a disconnect a little bit when you're living off campus, because most people aren't really over living on 12th Street. They're living 20, 30 minutes away, so you lose a little bit of the on-campus morale that goes on a lot. So that's really a big problem that we have to address as our student body ourselves, and is including everybody else that is not on campus. Well, Brianna, thank you so much for the great insight on off-campus housing. And guys, I think we got a pretty good story here going up to that's going to be published here soon. So I'm really proud of us. I don't know about you guys. I'm very proud of the work we've done. This has been all semester that we've been working on this. I think we're doing a great job. So thank you for listening to QU. I'm Carter Lenson, and this has been a production of QU Media Podcast Network.